Right, okay. Welcome to session 3, a guided working. As usual, any questions, throw them in local chat, IM me, or catch up with me another time. So, this session, I'm going to be talking through the only guided working that has worked for me, and that's one of my own creations. As well as that, I will be talking about problems that can crop up through visualization and some of the things that could potentially put you off from continuing. So, as a little, I think you were here from the last one, so... Yeah, I think you were all here from the last one, so I won't recap that one. But, as a slight reminder, I mentioned that I only use the one particular guided working. This came about because I tried various other guided workings, things that people have put together, either written. I'm not sure if I actually tried any audio ones, being long ago. This was the early 90s, so CD I didn't really have, and I didn't really get hold of tapes of any of this kind of stuff, so I suspect it was mostly from books. But since then I have tried a variety of audio recordings of guided workings, and of course some live ones too. Now, they all come to the same problem for me. Usually, most of them focus on a forest and a journey through a forest. Well, for me, forests don't have a huge significance. I prefer water, which I've said in previous sessions. So, I tended to end up just going along with them and then just... either losing focus or something else happening. So that became a bit of a frustration, and I think that's probably the same for many people who have a similar affinity for, well, unaffinity, what's that? A non-affinity? Whatever. It's just a word. I'm too hot to worry about the words properly. For just not working for them, and of course you could get to the point where this puts you off. It almost did for me. But by lucky chance, while I was commuting to work, I used to travel by train along the coast every day, and it was great to see the sea and the waves crashing on the sea and so on. What would happen is I would generally have some music on my Sony Walkman on tape, and I'd be plugged into that for the journey to work and the journey home from work, I have to say. Now, what happened? Something happened, I can't remember what precisely happened, but I ended up entering an altered state. I think it was a combination of the music. Now, this was the early 90s, and as I said in the last session, music has quite a strong influence on me as an emotional trigger, as some kind of trigger generally to enter a meditative state. It was all around this time I was experimenting with that idea that this sort of kicked off, and again, the early 90s, house, trance, and all that kind of music was becoming one of my focal interests. So, what I would tend to do would be plugged into this music, the swaying of the train. It was a pretty rocky journey on the train, and I entered some altered state. Quite a nice, like, meditative state. And from there, I started to develop a way of making use of this meditative state, coupled with the music and the interest in water. So, for the first half of my my guided working that I'm about to go through... Oh, hello, Wabe, I didn't see you suddenly appear. Hello, great, okay, I'm only just getting into it, you're not missed a huge amount. So, So I started to experiment with this, sort of music and train-induced meditative state, and it formed the basis of this, what I'm about to describe, this guided working, and this became a part of my meditative process for quite a considerable length of time. It'd be a good few years before I developed it any further. But we'll start off and then I'll explain some of this process. Now, the idea of me explaining this is that some people do seem to get stuck for ideas of how do you create a guided working. Well, essentially a guided working is, well, a working that is guided, obvious, but it comes about having the right steps in place. Now, it's a creative thing. Some people just can't do that, but still get surprised that they struggle with this. It all comes down to finding a scenario that you are comfortable with and that you can easily recreate each time. And I'm going to give you some examples of that and how some ways to deal with that later on when I go through some of the problems. And in fact, I think quite a few of these things today won't be even in the text. So, you're going to hear it here first, I hope. Now, this state. Now, from the previous session where I would enter a meditative state through music or emotional triggers and so on, that's generally how I always do it. I've got to achieve the right frame of mind, in inverted commas. Sometimes I'll have the music on as a focus for the working. That depends on then if I'm going to be using the music to heighten the meditative state, either via excitation, for example a high energy working, if I have a lot of energy I want to focus and to direct somewhere, or more likely, and it's not often I go for the more higher energy ones, a good rhythm, as I mentioned in the previous session, again, to get the brain working, get the visualization, the visual cortex working, and the mind ticking over to get it into gear. Now, again, all those from the last session, the situation and the environment is important. In this weather, it's quite warm at the moment, I would struggle to achieve any decent meditative state. It's just way too warm for me. But I would try and achieve the right environmental situation, as I mentioned previously. Begin my breathing, calm, measured, not really focusing on it. It's just all the usual things that I would do to focus on, well, focus or break my focus, whichever way you want to say. Now, then I would, now I say here, and this is what I actually now do, is I actually have a chant that I use to sort of heighten the focus. It's a sort of a spell, a sort of a trance. I call it my utterance. It's what I use to signal to my goddess that I'm preparing to enter meditative state and to do some workings with her. it's similar to any kind of ritual, sort of, not banishing, but creating the sacred space. Early on, when I developed this on the train, obviously I didn't have this then. I just entered a meditative state straight away. Oh, that was the purpose. It's only in more recent years that I've actually incorporated the ritual element to the meditative state. So, what I then do is I start my chant. I'll get this going. I'm usually looking for certain responses, you could say, from my goddess to know that she's actually is paying attention and she's not cleared off somewhere and is showing no interest whatsoever in talking to me or even listening at the least. So those kind of cues are sort of a change in my mental state, my emotional state. I can usually hear her jabbing away, and I usually get kind of an emotional insert from her into my mind that she's paying attention, that her ears have pricked up. So this is all part of the meditative process to get me going. Now, what I am then looking to do, once I'm now sort of relaxed, focused, ready to go, I visualize that I am floating in an infinite expanse of water in total darkness. All I can see, and this is the freaky bit, is the reflective surface of the water, and it's flat, it's lovely and still, but I can see just a slight ripple, but not much. Now, this is where the music comes in, and this is where I originally developed this from. I think this is probably where the association with the water and the music first kicked in. I keep myself, and it's probably just my chin, maybe. I'm not quite aware of my physical presence in this environment. I just have a point of consciousness that if I had a face, I would probably say my chin is just above the water. It's very low down, but not too low down. Then I would start to notice the music in the background. If it's obviously with headphones on, then I can't really avoid it at this stage. I would then start to notice that the music is having an effect on the water. It's starting to cause ripples, usually in time with the music, that sort of certain instruments would have a different waveform causing a ripple, and slowly each instrument or vocalist will start to have their input and cause the ripples to turn into waves and so on. Now, again, this was fairly early on in my meditative career, and I used to find this particularly relaxing, even though it does seem like it was hard work. Once you've got the response to the music going and the visualization of the waves, it does seem to, after a while, allow the brain to totally disengage from the day-to-day, which is what is one of the points of meditation, so that all your visualization is just acting as response to the music, and that is your focus. So it was a great way in the mornings to wake me up, because I would get the mental juices going, and at that time I was working in IT and software development, so it was a nice way to get things going and just get the focus and imagination going. Then what would happen is I would then use the same process for on the way home, and it was a great way to relax. just to totally disengage. So this is great for me. I tend to use this a lot. I would use this just on its own, and that's enough for me. Now, after I explained this particular method at the Children from Artemis, the Gathering, Artemis Gathering last year, might have been last year or the year before, might have been the very first year I did them, there was a lady there who said she had no real affinity to water like I do, but she's more of an earth person. Yet, instead, she visualised it with mud and ripples of mud, and she found that worked brilliantly for her. So there are adaptions to these things, and obviously you don't have to use water if it's not your thing, but you could say use fire if a fire creature. You might see dancing flames, air. Let's see, what could you do with air, because it's not exactly that visual, but you could do it with rain, I suppose, or cloud. But it does seem to help with getting the mind going. Now, I could stay, if I'm not after any particular working, then I would stay with this constantly until I feel I need to break out of it, either that I'm relaxed enough or that I fall asleep usually. Now, if I do have a particular purpose for entering this meditative state for communication with my goddess, and this will be dealt with more in some later sessions where I discuss astral projection, which is the other side of my workings with my goddess, what I would either stay in this, or I would now start gearing up for the projection process. Now, for me, what I would then say is, once I have the full visualization working, I would move my focus away from it and then create the intent to project, to leave this physical form behind and to enter my sacred space, my temple, with to meet my goddess. Now, I'm not entirely certain where this idea particularly came from or how I actually developed it, but the effects have remained the same for the last 10, 15, 16, nearly 20 years now. However long it is, I'd have to pick my book up to remind me. When I make that intent, I then start to notice the water dissipate. There's less constants. Now, whether that's because my visual focus is now moving upwards above the water line, the horizon, so I don't see it, I don't know. Never really thought about it. So I then start to see a series of images appear, and they're reasonably consistent. There's the Egyptian Ankh symbol, the goddess Maat, and they're sort of flashing past like roadside signs hurtling past. So there's this feeling that I'm actually rapidly accelerating my velocity, maybe because I'm about to I don't know, leave or project, or I'm travelling somewhere. Whether that's a psychological thing I don't know, but the effect is much the same. Now, once these symbols have passed, then I start to the blackness will dissolve into the intense light of where my temple is situated. and then I will continue as I would do if I was doing physical working. But the ritual working is for another session. Now, that is really my entire guided working that I do on a my only working that I do. It's not much, I've got to admit. So, I suspect people have a lot more fun things than that they can experience. But it's what works for me, and this is what's really important. Now, time. That can vary. As I said, when I first started doing this, this was on the train to and from work, and that would be about a 40-minute train journey. So it's achievable in 40 minutes. Sometimes it's been less. Sometimes it's been a good hour or an hour and a half. It doesn't really matter. Now, if that might help, then help it can be. But what happens when things do go wrong and you don't see things like this happening, whether they're spontaneous or whether you've actively looked or actively created the working? Now, most common thing is, as I said, you start to wander off. If it's a woods, then I would probably start to go off somewhere else. I think I've said this in previous sessions. That is normal. Don't fight it. Go with it. See where it takes you, because that's more likely what's needed for you right at that time. So if it does go pear-shaped, don't worry, it's not completely lost. It would only be completely lost if it all drew a blank. But then again, you could probably still learn something from there. Perhaps it was wrong. Perhaps you did something wrong. Or it wasn't, you weren't approaching it the right way, your mental state wasn't quite right. It could be so many things. Now, this is where keeping a journal is absolutely important, because you can write this down and then just compare notes. Do not give up. Never give up with this. You have to keep going with that, with it, because it is... people do seem to think visualization is tricky. It isn't. You cannot function as a human being if you cannot visualize. It is what we do as human beings. We have to have our imagination, and we have to be able to process information that's not directly coming from our eyes. Now, as we are, our eyes are forward facing. Now, this is another thing. People will tend to put a lot of effort into creating an image in their head of everything that they should see. Well, that's hard work. You'll get a headache, especially if you're not familiar with it or you're pushing it too hard. Our eyes are forward facing. Therefore, in the animal world, we are hunters. We are predators. We have bifocal vision, not a 360 degree like, say, a frog would have. Now, because we are forward facing, our eyes will work with a cone of, I think it's about, I don't know, it's about 150, 160 degree range of vision. The peripheral vision is not as well defined as the central core. Now, work with that. You don't have to visualize the trees all around you. You know there's trees around you, if you're going back to the forest option. You know there's trees around you. You know what trees look like. Therefore, you do not have to visualize the trees until you focus on them in your working. So, if you know what a tree looks like, just assume those are all trees, and the greeny blur is what you need. It's only where you lay your eyes on to focus. And this is the other thing, is that it's very hard to focus your eyes on something for more than a few seconds. The brain cannot cope with that, so you're continuously shifting your focus around. Now, those are a couple of options. Those are a couple of reasons why things go wrong. Some others are that you enter the meditative state and you're too relaxed and you drop off to sleep. That's common. I do that frequently, and I still use that as a means to create a decent sleep. Now, what can be the problem there is that you are doing too much. You shouldn't. I found I don't work with visualization if it's too close to the bed. Because you associate your bed with sleep, you are going to enter a sleep state when you go into the bed to do the visualization. Now, I would sit on it and not lie on it. And that helps. Likewise with chairs, I would aim to be seated rather than lying down. Now, let's think. Let's see, what other blocks do we have? Just a general block. No creative juices flowing. It all happens. Happens to all of us, and on a regular basis. We can't all be creative 24/7. If you find you just got no, you're just not able to focus, then stop. Don't force. Never force. And this goes for any meditative process, whether it's visualization or whatever you want to call it. If you do not do it because you have to, because it is the time of day that you have to do it, just go and do something else. Now, it can be fairly liberating to do something fairly menial. Say, you know, washing up, if you do washing up by hand, or a bit of gardening. Any sort of manual process that doesn't require a huge amount of focus or concentration, you'll find quite quickly that you end up entering a slightly daydream state, and that is good. That is where you need to be. Daydreaming, visualization, they're the same thing. It's just daydreaming is a lot lighter in you've not completely separated from the world around you as much. It's not such a deep thing as a full meditative state, but it can still be of use. Now, there's one technique I've been playing with in regards to aiding a creation. If you're having problems creating the imagery, then I've been thinking, well, it came out of last year's Artemis Gathering when I did my visualization class there. And I thought, I'm not sure how I came to it, I was talking with Lisa. But this came into my head as a way to try things. Now, if you're lacking the visualization, the creative aspect, pick a photo or a painting, preferably a photo that you've, say, a wedding or a party, something where there was a social interaction that you were a part of, and there were some people there that you know fairly well. It's quite important that they are people you know quite well, for a number of reasons. The first and the most important is that you know their likely response to you doing things, and you'll see where I'm going with this in a minute. Also, that you know their personalities, their humour or not non-humour, You know the event because you know the course of the event through that what that picture's depicting. And not sure if there's any others, but they'll do. We'll fill it in as we go. Some might come up to me again. So let's say it was a birthday party. Now, if it's your birthday party, let's go with that. So, you were centre of attention, most likely. There was probably cake, presents. Okay, it's probably saying you're quite young. But there's a cake and there's lots of merriment. Now, if you have that photo, if it's you, if you're not in it, makes things a lot easier. But if you are, doesn't matter. If you were to imagine that scenery that you were in, that location, those people, and what was going on, imagine if you were to do, if you had done something differently. If you would say, blew out the candles on the cake, and then instead of cutting the cake, you just dived headfirst into it and just rubbed your face in the cake. Now, visualize if you were doing that, and then, because of the cause and effect, what would have happened around you? You then start to visualize the people's reactions, and then go from there. Cause, next event, cause, next event, and just let it go and just have fun and try these things. Because of the people, you know those people, and you know the location, presumably, if it was somewhere like your house or somewhere you know, then most of the work's done for you. You know, you don't have to create these people, you don't have to create the location, you just need to allow their personalities to play out as if it was a play, or you were watching a bit of TV. It's a really nice, simple means to create an environment, to create some imagery. Now, once you have that kind of activity going on, then you could probably introduce some creativity. You could say, right, you put your face into the cake, it's covered in cake. Well, it's unlikely that, say, some dogs would have rushed in and started licking your face and to get the cake off, unless of course you've got dogs there, but that is adding some creativity, some element that wasn't in the original location. So it's imagery you've had to create. So you then have to then create that activity, their effect, and then of course the effect it would have had on everybody else around you. It's just daydreaming, it's just having... Now, I know, Wabe, you have some pretty funky dreams, so this could be quite interesting of a combination for some of the things you do. But I think it works really well because of the less effort you need to use. Let's think. Oh, I can see some other things. Other blocks. I think physical exercise is a good way to work off some of the blocks you have. It is hard. I've got to admit, it is hard work. Some of us do seem to work this easier than others, but perseverance is key. Oh, crikey, time's moving on. How much have I got? Okay, not a lot left. Right, so... as well as, and I've mentioned this through my guided working that I wasn't aware of my physical appearance. To gain the most from visualization, from working, and then to gain the benefits when you come to do lucid dreaming and projection and so on, is to create enough of a convincing reality for you, for yourself. So, for example, the being aware of your body, that is important. If you just have a point of consciousness, that's fairly common when you start doing mental projection, where you don't have a physical body to worry about. It is just your point of consciousness moving around. But you need to, instead of just the visual side, you need to be aware of some of the other physical senses. Let's drop back to the forest one again. It seems to work quite well for a number of these issues. For example, if you are in a forest, you're likely not to just see trees, but there'll be an odour of damp leaves, if it's that kind of forest. You'll hopefully have a sense of smell, so you may smell the flowers, the air may have an odour to it. And then what about other aspects? Your sense of taste? Hopefully you won't be licking trees or eating dirt, but you know, you never know, you might do. There may be a taste of something you can try for. And what about your physical touch? Are you barefoot? Can you feel the dirt between your toes? Is it squelchy? Is it hard? Is it mossy? Is it stone? And I think I mentioned this last time, was about the sand. I'll repeat this, because I really hate sand between my feet, my toes, that if I entered my Egyptian temple where I do my working, if there wasn't any sand there, I would know it's not convincing enough as a reality. I would expect there to be sand everywhere, because it gets absolutely everywhere. Even though I hate it, it's an important part of the reality feeling. So I need to have that there. So these things you just need to add in, and they all take work, they all take effort to create within your mind. But once you get used to it, the brain will fill in the gaps, and the frequency you do this will help a huge amount. Other aspects are, well, there's gravity, for example. Is there any gravity? Which direction is it going? So these are important things. Any other imagery you get will be the outcome of your creativity, and maybe the external forces that are trying to communicate with you. Now, this is like to do with divination process mainly. If you use scrying, it's all part of the external view. Now, there's this leads on, the external view leads quite nicely on to one of the final aspects of visualization, and that's contact with other things. Now, I call them things. In the last session I mentioned about not doing this when you are wound up, if you are distressed, anxious, depressed, any of those things, because of at some point through the visualization process your subconscious will start to generate imagery. Even if it's on the peripheral to the meditative state, it may produce imagery that will be based upon your current mental and emotional condition. So if you are all wound up and anxious, then you could get some nasty imagery back. But not all imagery, even bad imagery, is bad. Depending on, and you'll get a feel for this, whether the imagery is from your own subconscious, from your own creativity, or whether it's external. If you think about the shamanic kind of journeys, this is where I'm coming from now, and that's to do with the meeting of spirits, whether they are astral spirits or other entities, whatever their source. If they are trying to make contact with you, they could well appear when you are in a relaxed state, in a meditative state. You'll be more susceptible to their appearance. So if you see something out of the ordinary, if something starts to pay attention, like in dream analysis, you have the organic dream where it's just general weirdness going on, and then you've got the symbolic dreams where there are certain very strong focal aspects that are taking vying for your attention. The same way with any kind of visualization, if an entity is attempting to make communication, it will jump up and down and start to try and get your attention through appearing in front of you in a variety of different forms. So it's then your choice whether you want to make contact, and well, that's down to you, however that works out. But it's always something to worth keep a lookout for. But the important thing is detail. Trying to keep as much of the imagery going as possible to make it worthwhile and enjoyable. And that's it. The most important thing is enjoy it. It's a great release. It's a great way to relax, great way to focus on things. Go for it. And I think that about wraps up this session. Next session, ooh, that's interesting. It's in 2 weeks. Does that mean we are going to be at Artemis Gathering? Or we got another one to stick in before then? I think we might be able to creep in with another one. Oh, Wavy's typing. Yep, another one before. Because I know at... oh yes, the 28th will be the next session. It'll be the one after that. We shall be at Artemis Gathering. So the next session is a really good one, and one I'm really fond of. And that's, yeah, 4 weeks. Thank you. Counting the days. Now, the next one, session 4, is putting visualization to use. And that is where we start to discuss wishing and actually using visualization to bring about change in your life. In your life or in the lives of others. It's however you want to use it. It is, wish fulfillment is a really enjoyable and exciting thing. And then we start to look at the projection side too. So if there's any questions, I will answer them now, or if not, you can always catch up with me another time and place. I will sort out notes, and I think you were all here from the previous one, so I won't give out those notes of the previous ones. If you want the previous notes, then fine, I can throw them out. Great, that's those. Right, Are there any questions before I switch off recording? No, doesn't look like it. Oh, you're good. Okay. Right. I think we're okay. Oh, have you got one? Okie dokie. No problem. Thank you for coming along. I quite enjoyed this one. Oh, you're welcome. And let me stop the recording. Thank you for listening if you're on the podcast.